The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Thursday, July 24th, 2008. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. In agricultural news, a federal judge's decision on hang and grazing on CRP acres could have wide-ranging implications. We'll have this and other stories this half hour. And Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, will be by with the latest on weather conditions. It's all on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the Land-Grant College in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this. September wheat in Kansas City, 8.16½, up 4½. December, 8.40¾, up 5. September wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 7.87¾, up 4½. December, 8.11¼, up 4½. March, 8.33¼, up 3¾. September corn, 5.73, up 1½. December, 5.92, up 1½. March, 6.11¼, up 1½. May, 6.23¾, up 1¾. August soybeans, 13.85, down 9¼. September, 13.73, down 12¾. November, 13.73, down 11. January, 13.90¾, down 10½. August soybean meal, 373.80, down 2.30. August soybean oil, 58.93, up 38. August live cattle, 98.55, up 40. August feeder cattle, 112.37½, down 22½. August lean hog, 79.72½, up 132½. And those are today's settlements in Chicago and in Kansas City. Taking a look at the outside markets for you, September crude oil, 125.30, up 86. October, 125.95, up 91. August ethanol settling at 234.1, up 4⅓. September 229.5, up 3½ cents. The August RBOB at 305.35 is up 19.1. September 307.01 is up 17.2. August heating oil at 356.50 is up 14.9. September 359.58 is up 17.8. And looking at the silver contract for September, the settlement there, 17,298, down 16. And the August gold contract settling at 9,2230, off 50 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 11,405, is off 2.26. The U.S. dollar, 72.91, is up 10. The CRB at 412.86, down 129, and the S&P 500 at 1259.37 is off 2306. Taking a look at meteorologist Daniel Pounder's two-state forecast tonight, he says in Illinois and western Indiana, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. In eastern Indiana, increasing cloudiness, lows ranging from 58 in northeastern Indiana to 68 in western Illinois. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms, highs ranging from 82 in the north to 88 in the far south. Be sure to join us this evening at the El Paso Community Building in El Paso for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. Dinner at 6, the meeting getting underway at 7. No advance registration is required. The meeting is free. Our analysts for the meeting include Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, and this man, Mike Zuzulo, a Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, I don't want to poo-poo such a small move in corn, but I think it was kind of significant that corn managed to claw its way to a positive result today and get above 590.91.
We'll take anything we can get at this point, Dave, won't we? I think you're right. I mean, it was also nice to see the crude oil market was back up, and we think the corn got some benefit from that. The wheat market was back up. That's something we didn't have yesterday. It sounded like from our contacts in Chicago yesterday had a lot of wheat-corn spread unwinding. Today had a lot of bean-corn spread unwinding. So part of the explanation for why the beans didn't follow through with the wheat and corn today goes back to the spread action from our contacts up there at EFG. So we like the fact that we got above 590. We like the fact that Nove Beans was able to close back up above yesterday's low after taking it out, but it didn't get much above it. So that concerned us a little bit. But like you said, we'll take anything at this point. 610 December corn would be an old trend line. If we could close above that, especially on a Friday going home tomorrow, that would make the charts look a lot better, and it would probably solidify some of the short-term buy indicators in the oscillators that we're starting to see in the daily charts.
Maybe give us an opportunity for a recovery rally for the midpoint of the move, somewhere around 655.
We would like to see that. You know, some of the people that we've talked to in Chicago have also talked about maybe a little bit of a bounce where we can get back to 635 to 655 area. That would be very nice to see. I think you got some bigger picture good news, bad news also today. The good news was the fact that the energy speculation bill came out late on the news wires, may stall here tomorrow with Republicans threatening a procedural tactic
right. That
would just kind of sideline the bill. It could still come back after the August break, but it could put the bill back in the hopper and may never be seen again if we have a lot of other bills ahead of us. I think the bad news, and probably the one that really does concern us and probably something we'll talk about a little more at El Paso tonight, is the financial markets are being led lower by the banking sector. Freddie and Fannie in particular are down about 15 to 20% on the day. That really does concern us because it's drugged down Goldman, it's drugged down Merrill, it's drugged down Citi. There really is kind of a 1-2 punch here in these financial markets right now when the banks lead us lower. And a lot of clients have said, why do you put so much weight on these GSEs and this financial banking market? One thing is the systemic risk, and what I mean by that is the problems here in the United States and Great Britain bleed over into the other world banks and bleed over into other countries. And there's a lot of potential for that because other central banks around the world carry a lot of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae stock. And when they see their valuations and their asset flows, you know, go down 75% because their share prices have dropped that much, if we have a poor representation here in the United States and these two GSEs get sick, then we could indeed spread this over into the other financial markets. Credit around the world then becomes very, very tight, and that's the number one historical factor from our research that usually denotes a worldwide recession, global economic slowdown, things like that, that global business cycle we've talked so much about.
Well, how tight of a relationship do you want to put on the S&P Goldman Sachs and the Dow Jones AIG as its relationship to a corn rally? Do we need to see these outside market influences begin to turn around before we can expect corn to have a significant rally?
I think that's correct, Dave. In the longer term, I think there between now and harvest, we could have a retracement and a relief rally like you and I were talking mm-hmm. about at the beginning of the show. But I think the other thing we got to attach to this banking sector issue, if the credit markets indeed continue to freeze up and get as bad as they did back this spring, that means interest rates are going to go higher, and the yields are going to go higher on bond spreads, and that means the investment's going to be attracted back away from commodities and stocks and over into a safer harbor, so to speak, of bonds and bond yields because the return's going to be there. So there's kind of a medium-term, longer-term repercussion from what we're dealing with here. If we see a global slowdown, that usually means higher interest rates, and it usually means less inflation. I think that's what the crude oil market has had to deal with here fundamentally in the past couple of weeks is that you don't see the gold back up at $1,000 an ounce anymore. You don't see the gold or the crude up at $148 a barrel. You see them well off their highs, and it's because the inflation bug has been kind of stunted and taken out of the markets here because everybody's starting to worry more about global demand. And so that hurts your commodities, too, in terms of psychology and fund investment, too. So I relate them very highly right now. Why? Because this market, ever since 4 or 5 years ago when it started to go up, has always been about globalization, global demand, demand outstripping supply. And so that still holds, that fundamental feature.
What do you make of the December-July 2009 spread?
Well, I don't know much about it. I haven't been watching that. I've been really concentrating on the DEIS spread and that back-end DEIS market, ever since we haven't gotten the CRP announcement, has kind of, you know, looks like it's kind of taken some profits. I think the trade is still expecting that the markets will run full carry, and I think that's because the USDA has continued to build old crop corn supplies. You know, in every report we've seen, ever since the quarterly grain stocks, it seems like they bump up the 07-08 number just a little bit to the point where we've got ample supplies. And I think that's one of the big reasons why we haven't been correct in assuming that the basis in corn is going to come back and narrow up here in the summertime. Both the crop weather during pollination and this old crop supply continues to keep that basis fairly wide.
Turn your attention to the wheat market and how it relates to the other two.
Well, I think it's still the leader. I think you look at the open interest by funds and number of contracts and total open interest on the Commitment to Traders report, and there's less long wheat by open interest now than there has been since late 2006. And so you've got less fund flows there. They've already gotten out of that market. I think the other thing goes back to the wheat that's very beneficial is the idea that we've fallen enough that the global demand should be picked up. You've got the wheat corn spread back above $2.15 in the lead month futures, so the wheat is no longer hitting the corn as a feed grain and trying to get substituted into that channel. So we still look at wheat as very much a leader, and again, we'll talk about more of that in El Paso tonight.
All right, then. Before we let you go, let's get your recommendations about what you should do. First, if you're a hedger, and then if we have a little bit of time left, maybe a speculator.
I think as a hedger, I think I've made the emotional commitment here. If we really follow this analysis down the road on this S&P and this banking market, if the S&P 500 goes back below 1250 in the September futures, then we're probably going to step up the buying of the puts pace. We're going to go after more corn puts in the September contract, like a 540 or a 550. And like we talked about this morning, chalk the wheels. If I were a speculator, I think the Delta weather is definitely not being priced into the bean market right now, the hot, dry forecasts that are coming out, and these forecasts lasting till the end of the month potentially is I think, certainly going to clip the early crop of bean and the early yields very much. So maybe in a week and a half, if these financial markets hold together and don't test their old lows, I think coming in and buying some set bean calls before the August report is something we'll do with our speculators.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave. See you tonight.
See you tonight, Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. He'll be on the panel along with Jackie Vakes and Bill Mayer at the El Paso Community Building at 7 o'clock, a little dinner before that at 6. You're certainly invited to that meeting. No charge there. No advance registration is required.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, a federal judge is hearing additional information from USDA and the National Wildlife Federation today over a dispute of release of CRP acres for hang and grazing. USDA has suggested limiting the program to 3 million acres. The NWF wants the program limited to the 1.7 million acres already applied for. The judge's ruling may impact whether USDA will allow some CRP land to exit the program early without penalty. USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer says, quote, "We're not sure how it's going to affect what we do in CRP in the short term or in the long run." Talks in Geneva continued yesterday behind closed doors and in smaller groups in hopes of producing some type of breakthrough in the Doha round of world trade talks. WTO Director Pascal Lamy has scheduled a meeting today for all the trade ministers and delayed a conference on services negotiations. Lamy says the meetings have been, quote, constructive but modest and unevenly distributed. Yesterday, India indicated it was pleased by an offer that would limit U.S. subsidies to $15 billion a year, but immediately came under pressure from U.S. negotiators to make concessions on tariffs on manufactured goods. Meanwhile, the American Farm Bureau Federation says the $15 billion U.S. tariff offer was expected. Stuart Doan has more.
American Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman is in Geneva for this week's WTO mini-ministerial meeting and says U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab's announcement that Washington was willing to cut its level of trade-distorting domestic support to farmers to $15 billion a year from a previous offer of $17 billion was not a major surprise.
Because it's in the midpoint of the range that was in the text, but she put it out with a challenge, basically, to the other countries, saying, okay, this is what we can do. Now, you know, you tell us what you can do on market access. And that's really going to be the key for American agriculture, is ultimately what we get on market access. And the process hasn't gotten far enough along for us to make an assessment on that yet.
Talks aimed at rescuing the Doha round entered a third day on Wednesday, with emerging economies like Brazil and India saying the U.S. had not done enough on agriculture to justify moves by them. Without a breakthrough in the coming days, the global trade negotiations risk further years of delay. And according to Farm Bureau's Stallman,
we've been very clear with our negotiators about, you know, the fact that it has to be a good deal for U.S. agriculture. And if it's not a good deal, then, we need to walk away from it.
I'm Stuart Doan reporting.
Senate Republicans say they will block a bill that would strengthen oversight of energy futures markets if Democrats don't allow a series of amendments for more domestic oil and gas production. Senate Democrat Majority Leader Harry Reid wants to limit amendments for fear of losing some from within his own party who oppose expanded domestic oil exploration. Reid says, quote, the procedure's fine. The Republicans don't want to legislate. Purdue University professors say in a new study that rising energy prices and a declining U.S. dollar are the main factors to the increase in commodity prices. Purdue economist Wallace Tyner.
The first is global trends in production and consumption of agricultural commodities. The second has to do with sort of macroeconomic factors, the depreciation of the dollar. And the third has to do with biofuels. And these are linked in some ways, but in some ways it's like a perfect storm of all these things coming together at the same time that has led to the huge run-up in prices.
The study says about $3 of the corn price increase comes from higher oil prices and about $1 as a result of the ethanol subsidy. The study downplays the effects of increased food and energy demand from China and India, along with weather and disease issues. Again, Wallace Tyner.
Well, when we looked at the data, we found that, yes, consumption's been growing in China and India. They're rapidly growing economies, and their consumption of agricultural commodities is growing. But so is their production. Both those countries have had policies essentially of food self-sufficiency, and they don't trade to any significant degree on world markets. China imports vegetable oils, and India exports a tiny amount of rice, but they don't trade corn, they don't trade wheat, China doesn't trade rice. India and China are not the drivers of the food price increases.
The full study is at www.farmfoundation.org. The Department of the Interior's Bureau of Land Management has published proposed regulations to establish a commercial oil shale program that could result in the addition of up to 800 billion barrels of recoverable oil from lands in the western part of the nation. The U.S. Geological Survey says the U.S. is home to more than half of the world's oil shale resources. Brazil plans to create a working group to study the impact high fertilizer costs are having on producers. The study will explore alternatives to increasing fertilizer production in the country. Fertilizer prices rose by at least 40%, depending on type, in Brazil since last year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us now with our cash grain analysis is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
You're headed over to El Paso for the meeting this evening.
And sure, looking
El Paso,
forward to it.
Yeah, at the community building there. What do you anticipate people will want to be talking about?
Well, that's what I was just kind of going over some stuff, and I think there's probably going to be a lot of questions as far as what happened, but more importantly, what does it mean to as we go down the road here. And there is a lot, as you're talking with Mike, there's just a lot of different aspects to this market. It's a complex situation and should be a lot of fun.
Yep, and it should. The meeting getting underway at 7, and again, you're all invited. No reservation required for the meeting, and we do hope to see you there at the El Paso Community Building in El Paso. A lot of short covering today, I think, as a feature, as well as some intermarketing spreading. What do you make of it?
Well, I think the market is trying to find the bottom here. I'm not sure that it's really found, at least on the corn side of things. I think you're right, I think we saw a lot of the spreads that were put on earlier in the year where they were buying the beans and selling the corn. I think we saw a lot of those get unwound here in the last couple of days. As far as the cash side of things, not a lot of activity out here. We're pretty steady on the corn bases, pretty steady on the bean bases, a little bit weaker along the river. I think you've got a lot of logistic management going on right now from the seller side, from the elevator side of things, trying to see if they got everything lined up to have the space empty when that first truckload comes in here this fall. And from the processor and the shipper side, I think you have some trying to see if they've got enough bought to get them to that point. So not a whole lot of activity, but, you know, you see a little push here and there, and somebody will get some stuff bought and then kind of back off again.
I was going to ask if we're going to see some more end-user coverage.
Well, I think right now it seems to me like on the corn side of things, I think we definitely will see some usage get locked in here, probably going out into the new crop, I would imagine. With the carry in the market on corn, a user, of course, would be better off to go ahead and keep their inventory full right now. On the soybean side, it's more of the situation if you want to try to get yourself to the new crop, and once you get to that point, you probably want to back off a little bit.
Consequences of the Mississippi River shutdown?
I don't think we've seen a lot of that. I think that may have had something to do with a little bit weaker bases along the river this week, but it doesn't seem like it's a huge deal right now.
I wonder how many empty barges are down in the Gulf.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's not coming right up the center Gulf, so I think that's probably helpful from that standpoint. And it looks like it's going to be fairly short-lived. So,
prices today, sir?
Cash corn is 518, new crop 532. Beans, $13.60, new crop, $12.93.
Thank you much, Bill.
Thanks, Dave. See you tonight.
See you tonight. Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. He is in Lexington, Illinois. It's National Tequila Day. Tequila was first produced in the 16th century near the city of Tequila by the Aztecs, long before the arrival of the Spanish in 1521. When the Spanish ran out of their own brandy, they began distilling tequila, North America's first indigenous distilled spirit. By the way, it is a common misconception that tequila is fermented from cactus. On this day in agricultural history in 1938, Nestle introduced Nescafé instant coffee in Switzerland. Originally, the product was developed to assist the Brazilian government in solving its coffee surplus problem. Instant coffee is made with a blend of beans mixed in a blending drum, roasted, ground, and then brewed in huge percolators. Then the coffee is sprayed into a heated stainless steel dryer to remove all the water. In 1997, Scottish scientists announced they had cloned a sheep with human genes. And in 2005, Richard Dahl died. Dahl, a British scientist, was one of the first to link cigarette smoking to lung cancer. Based on a 50-year study, Dahl found that almost half of persistent cigarette smokers were killed by their habit. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Josh.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing today?
I am doing well, and the weather is doing well. I feel like a broken record saying weather over the next 2 weeks will favor crop development, but hey, that's what it is.
I'll tell you what, after the spring and early summer we had, particularly areas west of the listing area here, that's not necessarily a bad thing, is it?
No, it's not.
The main activity from a thunderstorm perspective today is out near St. Louis, and that thunderstorm started in South Dakota, moved through Iowa. Some parts of Iowa picked up 3 to 5 inches on these thunderstorms overnight. Now they're moving through St. Louis, and has been the trend as of late. As they get to like the Missouri, Arkansas, Memphis region, those thunderstorms die out, and really an area of interest right now from our perspective is the dryness that's developing across the Delta region, the Boot Heel, southern parts of Illinois, into Tennessee, northern Mississippi. Really dry there over the past 2 to 3 weeks, and as a result, temps are running above normals. We think there's some potential issues on the horizon for beans in that area.
Yeah, it looks to me like that parts of Kansas and Missouri we'll have some warm temperatures maybe next week in the 90s.
Warm may be one way to put it. If you're living out in that area, you may say it's downright hot. This ridge of high pressure sitting over Kansas, over Oklahoma, at times into northwestern Arkansas, and the temps underneath that ridge, if you're right under in that area, you're going to see temps over 100 good part of next week. Now move into Missouri, you're talking mid to upper 90s at times next week. Further east into southern Illinois, we're talking mid-90s. So this is the feeling, the dog days of summer coming on south of the corn and bean belt. It's interesting. You shift everything a couple hundred miles north, and we'd be talking a much different situation as we move through pollination.
We've been keeping a lot watchful eye on crude oil futures as it relates to the potential movement in corn futures. So what can you tell us weather-wise that might be influencing over the next bit of time crude oil futures?
Well, a lot of that comes down to the tropics this time of year, and we had Dolly as a near miss to the Gulf production zone. It made landfall yesterday right near Brownsville, Texas, that is, and that was a near miss for the Gulf production zone. As a result, you've seen crude oil prices come off here recently. It's still only mid-July, though. From a tropic standpoint, the peak of the season is early September, so we have a long way to go, and the Gulf Energy Zone certainly is at risk this season, as they are every season.
Is Chesapeake Energy projecting a hit this year?
I don't think we'd project a hit in any given year, but we think if you look at climatological prospects of Gulf Energy Zone, it's at least odds on climatology, if not a little better, given how the ridging is setting up and the steering flow across the Atlantic for the Gulf Energy Zone.
Thank you very much, Josh.
Thanks, Dave.
That's meteorologist Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that's today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain analysis, and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the audio analysis tab. This is Dave Dickey.